From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Daryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Boston. Think of your favorite coffee shop, or maybe there's a bar that makes the best cocktails and the bartenders are happy to see you. Now imagine something like that for cannabis, because it could be coming to your neighborhood. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker has signed a bill giving the go-ahead for a cannabis cafe pilot program. And that's not all. This bill includes a number of reforms that help local cannabis entrepreneurs and people with old marijuana convictions. There is a lot going on in this bill, so we got Boston Globe cannabis reporter Dan Adams to come by and talk us through this legislation and what it means for the state. He's here with us now. Dan, so great to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Daryl. I appreciate it. Good to be here.
Tell us about this bill.
Yeah, a huge moment for cannabis in Massachusetts. This is a bill that's been long awaited by advocates, by entrepreneurs, and even by state regulators who have called for some of these changes. As you mentioned, it's an omnibus bill. It sweeps together a bunch of different provisions. Maybe the most important one is this loan fund for social equity entrepreneurs, essentially people from areas of the state that were the hardest hit during the war on drugs, where there were really disproportionate rates of arrest that affected Black and brown people much more than other communities in the state. But those folks have really struggled to get into the industry. And so there's going to be a fund filled up with money from the tax on recreational marijuana sales that's going to help give them a leg up and help them get into the business. So that's a huge piece of it. There's also a component in here that would let cannabis cafes open, similar to what's happening next door in New York, you know, like a bar for cannabis. That's something that people have been calling for. So those are two of the big highlights that jump out of this bill for me.
I want to go back to the part about the equity fund. Can you take us through that process of getting a cannabis license and running a business in the state of Massachusetts, just so we can get a sense of what the challenges are?
Yeah, it's a very difficult process for anyone with any amount of resources. One of the lawyers who was involved in the initial legalization campaign here in Massachusetts likes to say that the state regulates it like it's plutonium. And he's being a little hyperbolic, but not too hyperbolic. So, you know, the first step is getting local approval from the local city or town where you're trying to open. And even that can involve multiple steps. You might need the sign off from the mayor, but also the zoning board, you know, the planning commission. There's also very steep fees often at the local level. The state process is much more straightforward. It's if you check the boxes, you get the license. But all told, this is a process that can easily take a year, 2 years, and cost over $1 million. It's a very difficult business to get into. And as a result, it shouldn't be a surprise that so far, the people with the most resources have been the most successful at getting these licenses.
Right.
And that sort of stands in contradiction to the stated goals of our legalization law here in Massachusetts, which is that the Cannabis Control Commission create a diverse and equitable and inclusive industry that recognizes, that reflects the fact that there has been racially disproportionate enforcement of cannabis prohibition for practically a century leading up to this. And the idea is that we'd like to have an industry that includes those people who were on the losing end of prohibition. Now that we've acknowledged, frankly, this drug never should have been criminalized the way that it was, and so this fund is a big step toward helping those entrepreneurs get into the industry. There's also some reforms in there to the local approval process that should make getting that initial approval from the municipality easier and smooth that part of the process, make it take less time, which should also save money and make the industry more accessible.
Got it. So basically, a lot of these complications are rooted in this racist history of how cannabis has been regulated. Is that it?
You could say that. There are certainly entrepreneurs in this space who, when they go before these local boards, when they have a hearing where the neighbors show up and give their feedback, where they can feel that stigma lingering from the war on drugs. They can feel that judgment and those sort of old ideas about cannabis coming through and still shaping their future. And the state on the other side of that is trying to enact policies that smooth that path for people, that take those kind of obstacles out of the way. So there's definitely a tug of war going on there. But absolutely, the extreme racial inequity of the enforcement of cannabis prohibition is definitely the underlying force that is motivating this conversation around equity. Again, wanting to have an industry that recognizes that history. In other words, wouldn't it be a shame if, after 80, 100 years of essentially only arresting black and brown people for marijuana crimes, if white investors from Wall Street made off with all the profits?
Yeah, understood. And another part of this bill is the Cannabis Cafe pilot. What do you see happening once this pilot program gets up and running? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. These facilities have been around in a place like Amsterdam for a while, but they're a pretty new idea in the United States, and they're actually regulated quite differently here. You know, the idea here is to do what voters said in 2016, which is put marijuana on a level playing field, more or less, with alcohol. There's a very weird situation right now in Massachusetts where if you're a renter, if you're a student living in a dorm, if you're living in public housing, or if you're a tourist staying in a hotel, you have no legal place to consume illegal drug. I mean, it's legal on paper, but it might as well not be, because where are you supposed to use it? You can't smoke on the sidewalk. You get a $100 ticket, unlike next door in New York, where public consumption is allowed anywhere that cigarettes are allowed. This is not, though, going to mean that cannabis cafes open up, in every neighborhood across the state overnight. It's going to be a very slow baby step kind of process intentionally, because I think there's a sense of that there's still some public trepidation around this. There's still some concerns about, impaired driving and things like that. So this pilot program is just going to roll out at first in a handful of municipalities that volunteer, that essentially raise their hand and say, we're willing to host one of these facilities. And they'll be working very, when they do open, they'll be working very closely with the town on things like odor remediation and making sure that these facilities are good neighbors, that they have safe transportation options so that folks don't have to drive. And all those kinds of conversations will be happening very intensively at both the local and the state level. And these facilities will be very highly regulated. And in fact, some entrepreneurs in the business think they're not viable financially because of how strict the regulations are around things like the serving size, the inability to combust cannabis indoors. It'll only be allowed outdoors with just vaping and edible consumption indoors. There's a ban on, preparing food. So you couldn't really have like a restaurant where, the appetizer has some cannabis mixed into the sauce or something like that. So it's going to be a pretty restrictive system. But nonetheless, people are excited about this finally happening. It was included in the original law as an idea, but never implemented because of sort of a technical glitch, which has now been fixed.
So we're not getting Starbucks for weed just yet.
No, sorry to disappoint you, Daryl. You'll have to put that dream on the shelf for another year or two.
Dang. All right. Now, on to a little more serious topic here. This legislation also mentions people with past marijuana convictions. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So under a 2018 bill in Massachusetts, there was a very limited pathway created to wipe away certain old convictions. But when I dug into that last year, I found that, very, very few people have been able to take advantage of this. I mean, really, it seems like just a few dozen people at most have been able to have old cannabis convictions or even other kinds of convictions that are eligible for expungement wiped away. The state basically makes these former defendants, they've got to go find their own arrest record in the jurisdiction where they were initially picked up. Then they've got to go find their old court records from the different courthouses they might have moved through while the case was being adjudicated. And then they've got to prepare an application sort of arguing that they're eligible for it, submit it to the probation department. Then the district attorney's office that originally prosecuted them has a chance to object. And then even then, if it clears all those steps and goes before a judge, the judge, previously still just had the discretion to say, this is not in the best interests of justice, and deny the request without even having to give a reason, not an appealable decision. Because of all those barriers, very, very few people made it through that gauntlet. And this law that was on paper is supposed to help people who previously had criminal convictions really hasn't done much for that community at all. This bill is a very modest step toward easing that path. It would just essentially make people with old marijuana convictions, it would remove some of the discretion from the process that judges have. It basically says that instead of giving them the option to clear away that old conviction, they're now essentially required to clear it away as long as it meets all the criteria. But the criteria are still quite restrictive. If you have another felony on your record besides the marijuana conviction, you're ineligible. If it happened after you're too old, you're ineligible. So we're still talking about a pretty small universe of people that will be eligible for relief compared to the overall pool of everyone who's ever had a cannabis conviction in Massachusetts, which runs into the tens of thousands. And so I think advocates are happy at the incremental improvement, but probably disappointed in the lack of broader reform to this really sort of fractured and difficult system that just hasn't helped that many people.
Understood. So there's still a lot of work to be done there. Thank you for breaking this down, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So right now is where we would take a break, but I have one more question for you. Do you have some time to stick around?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so Dan, my last question for you, I'm thinking to myself here, I'm a cannabis consumer, and, you know, listening to you talk about this bill and the impact that it has on entrepreneurs in the state, it's got me wondering, what should cannabis consumers think about as they go to their favorite dispensary? You know, what kind of impact can they have on their communities?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, cannabis consumers often do get sort of left out of this conversation, and which is weird because, of course, they're the basis of the whole industry. I think that as people's tastes, you know, mature, they'll become more and more discerning about the cannabis they buy, not just the quality of the product, but the quality of the people running it. Some of these big multi-state corporations have a lot of regulatory violations in other places. Some of them have lobbied really strenuously against equity policies, against the ability to home grow, other anti-consumer kind of things. I think we've seen across all industries that consumers are interested in sort of the ethics of the business that they're participating in. They care about the way that these companies are run. They care about where the products they buy come from. They want to know the story behind it. They want to know that it's local. And again, look no further than craft beer to see what an explosion there's been in that sector over the last 20 years of people who really want the good local stuff from the person around the corner. And I think consumers absolutely have the power to help bring about that reality by patronizing those kinds of businesses and being more discerning about where they shop. I also think that consumers and just the general public have some advocacy of their own to do, not about getting into the business, but about things like employment testing. You know, a lot of states that have legalized marijuana no longer allow companies to decline to hire or to fire somebody simply because they used marijuana legally during off hours. But if you flunk a drug test in Massachusetts, even if you smoked that joint a week ago and you're perfectly sober on the job, you could still be let go for that. And that's something that legislators didn't address this time around and that some people are really bitterly disappointed about.
Dan, thank you so much, man. I could talk to you about this all day. I really appreciate it and would definitely love to have you back sometime.
You got it. Anytime, Daryl.
That's Boston Globe cannabis reporter Dan Adams. And that's all for today. This episode was produced by Franny Monahan with sound design from Matt Reed. It was edited by Ben Brock Johnson. And from the newsroom of WBUR, I'm your host, Daryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you tomorrow. A lot of people listen to Consider This in the afternoon, and NPR's Up First in the morning. But a lot of the actual news happens in the middle of the day. And the team bringing the best information about that news as it happens is the team behind WBUR and NPR show Here and Now. And yes, there is a podcast version. So, want more of the best news reporting from public radio around the country? Check out Here and Now. Find it in the same place you found this podcast, wherever you listen. Just search Here and Now.